You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Tracy Ullman is the first British woman to be offered her own television sketch shows in both the United Kingdom and the U.S. Over the course of her 30-plus year career, her sketch comedy has earned her a reputation as an unparalleled impressionist. In her latest series, Tracy Ullman's Show, which aired in the United States last Friday on HBO, she tackles current events and British icons, but also manages to spoof American culture along the way. It's with great pleasure that I welcome Tracy Ullman back to our show.
Hello, Leonard. It's lovely to be back.
And this was done for the BBC originally?
Yes. I found myself being asked to go to the BBC to do a show for the first time in 30 years. Two women were running the department that commissioned the show, Charlotte Moore, who's now head of all programming, and my family Moore was head of comedy. And I think, you know, I thought, wow, 30 years ago, it was run by five guys in bow ties who, like the goons, had fought in the war. What? More national service jokes. Hey. Ha, ha, ha. Really was. Wow.
But it's very much more high culture.
Yeah. I mean, it's BBC stuff. There's still a man called Clive lurking around in suede shoes at the end of any BBC corridor. Somebody doing Wimbledon. So there's vestiges of it left, the BBC. But I was thrilled to be asked.
And how many shows in the series?
I did six, which are being shown now on HBO. And I've just done another seven. Which I hope will also be shown on HBO. But it's my take on the world of, I think every 10 years or so, Leonard, I seem to look at my surroundings and try and be everybody in society and update, you know, how I'm feeling about life and the world and everything.
Don't you hold both British and US citizenship?
I do, yeah.
Where do you live most of the time?
I try and live in both places. I think I've lived in the USA more, actually, in the last 30 years. But I'm spending a lot of time in London at the moment. My daughter lives and works there. And it's like a global hub. You know, you've lived and worked in London. You were telling me a long time ago at the Royal Court and places, and you went to school there.
I did was move sets until I complained that it was too heavy, it was too hard to do, and then they had me pulling flies.
Oh, you're bitching about stuff. You were doing the American stuff. My back, I get an injury at work.
Exactly.
You got in there, you're like, oh, shut up, you silly boy.
I was working illegally, too.
Were you?
Because I was on a student visa.
Oh, I see. But London changed so much, you know, we were like...
First of all, it's a lot more expensive than it was when I was a student.
It's this buzzing global hub, multi-ethnic melting pot, and it was like suddenly, you know, it seemed like New York, it seemed like Singapore, it seemed like all these, you know, and I was very excited by what happened within Europe, so I did a show about it, and then we voted for Brexit this year, so I'm sort of strange.
I assume that you've been following the election here, role that sketch comedy has played in relieving some of the tension. Mm. Have you wanted to jump in and do your own impressions of Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton?
I think Kate McKinnon and Alec Baldwin are doing an amazing job.
But you bear a certain physical resemblance to Hillary.
It takes me a while to get it together. I look good in wigs because I've got a big head, evidently. I think they're doing a great job. I mean, I love, thank God for Saturday Night Live every 4 years. I mean, Tina Fey doing Sarah Palin just made things bearable for me a few years ago. But maybe I'll do it next year on my show when one of them gets elected and I'll have them having a little trip to London.
Well, you've said that after tensions die down, you'd like to try doing Melania.
Yeah, she's interesting to me. It's where she comes from. But as people, a lot of people speak like this in London and I don't know quite where they're from. So you go in a coffee shop in London, you go, they have a very strange accent, you don't know where they're from now. And you go, where are you from? You have to guess one of the Stan countries or somewhere. It's this extraordinary mixture of accents in there. I think I'll do that later on. Let things simmer down. Heaven forbid I get anybody's ire at this point with a week to go.
Some must be easier to do than others, and I would assume that Melania might be easier than...
It'd be jolly hard to look like her, that sort of young and glamorous. They're harder to look like. It's like some people just come more naturally to me and I can hear where the voice is inside their head. And one of my more successful ones at the moment is Judi Dench.
Yes, the show opened with you made up to look like Judi Dench and she's shoplifting. What made you think of her as a serial shoplifter, a petty criminal with a real
mean streak?
But
if she gets caught, she says, oh no, I couldn't possibly have done that. I'm a national treasurer. And so then people go, oh no, yeah, that's right, of course you didn't, you know.
Those two wonderful writers, Andy Reilly and Kevin Cecil, had that conceit for her that she could do anything, you know, and scratch cars in plain sight and get away with it.
Steal booze. Jeremy Irons once described Dame Judy to me as a giggler. Do you know if she's found this funny?
She's been terrific about it. She actually did respond. She, after the show went out, she accepted an award and got up and said, hello, I'm Tracy Ullman. And she had a meeting or something that day at somewhere and pretended to steal something as she left. And then my daughter sent me a tweet yesterday from Judy's daughter, Finty. And Finty said that Judy was watching me being her. And she said, I don't remember filming that.
Well,
that's the ultimate
it took
compliment.
Me a moment,
listen to me
Tracy.
Showing off. The makeup's astounding. Floris Schuller. A Dutch guy. It's a sculptor. He's a real great artist, and he does these makeups for me. It's really particularly good.
It took me a little while to realize. I thought, well, she got Judi Dench to do her show. I thought,
did you?
How impressive.
Well, I fooled Leonard Lopate. Hey, and you're a smart guy. So we think you are.
Well, I'd like to believe I am, but I know. Well, your impression of Angela Merkel is hilarious. Have you been doing her for a while?
I just decided to put her within this mix for this series. I admire her and have found her very interesting. I just like when she speaks to the public in England and she tries to be that, you know, hello. And I remember years ago, do you remember when George W. Bush went up behind her and hugged her? Mm-hmm. And her whole body went, you know, it was like she didn't want to be hugged. It's like if anyone hugs the Queen, it makes me die laughing. The Queen came to DC a few years ago and a big African-American lady got a hold of her. She went, I'm just so happy to see you. And the Queen literally went, whoa! You know, and her handbag dropped. I love seeing people having to be. I imagine Angela Merkel is the only girl in the room and imagines that everybody fancies her. Everybody thinks I'm sex bomb and is after me. But, and I've put her with her and another astonishing makeup that Floris did. I really enjoy being Angela Merkel and physically moving like her and being.
Well, in one
singing.
Scene.
She sings a lot. If you watch the show, I do a lot of singing as Merkel.
Yeah, and
who
you
knew?
You've started singing. You actually made a record because of something that happened at a hairdresser's?
I like to try everything in my career. This is years ago, Leonard. I had a top 10 hit here in 84 with a song called They Don't Know. I worked at MTV as a VJ for a few weeks because of that. I was terrible. But, so I like to sing. I can carry a tune, and I like to have the characters sing. And I like to tap dance, too. I tap dance in the first.
You do it all.
Anything. I try anything.
In one scene, Angela Merkel is angry that, given her importance, she would be forced to go to Cardiff, Wales. This is, at least in part, a play on the rivalries between the UK and Germany. Do you think the jokes, those kinds of jokes, play well with American audiences? Do you think we would understand?
It's funny. I write that character with a lady called Georgia Pritchard, who's written for Veep for a few years. Mm. So, funny, on the writers on the show, they all write. They write for Veep and for me, and so they have this sort of, they've done a lot of political stuff, and it just seemed funny because there is the G, but Obama's always going to Cardiff for those G8s, and it just, you know, it's a bit of a dig at Cardiff, but I love Cardiff, actually. You always have to say that. Oh, Cardiff, it's a really great place. Boyo.
There's another joke that there's nothing to do in Scotland except to have referendums.
That's right. There's nothing to do in Scotland. Have referendums. That's political satire for you. Actually, this year's show, I do Nicola Sturgeon. Do you know who she is? The SNP, the one that, you know, that talks about the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've got done her this year. Her and Angela are kind of rivals.
How did that happen for you? Did you realize at a very young age that you had the ability to to do that kind of thing, to do impressions better than most other people? I know sometimes I will. There are certain people I do well. Henry Kissinger.
Who? Do it.
Henry Kissinger.
Okay.
Okay. He came on our show after he had an unpleasant experience the first time, so I was surprised he came back. Oh. He sat in the chair that you're in, and he said, "I'm here because my physical therapist is your biggest fan." And
wow. You guys share a physical therapist.
No, he said that his physical therapist was a fan of mine, and so she had said to him, "You must go on the London Book Show." But anyway, but I can't do an awful lot of people.
Yeah, but you could hear that. You could. I just could always do it. I mean, I have to study them. And I was just that kid that impersonated, you know, the people in my village or my teachers or my friends and did a show in my mother's bedroom. And they would find that very funny if I was somebody else. But it was always everyday people for me. There was a woman who lived opposite us who wore sort of rubber boots and a little woolen hat and had never got married because her fiancé had died in the First World War. And she was called Annie Cox. And I found her very, very poignant and empathetic. And if I impersonated her, that went down a storm in my house because it was Annie Cox. And I'd have a little sort of thing dripping off the end of my nose. She was always wiping her nose. And so it was the sadness of people that made me want to impersonate them too and be them. And so I hadn't done these famous people before, till a few years ago in one of my shows. And they're kind of Trojan horses, in a way. I'm using them to, you know, and sort of using Judy as, you know, publicity. But I like, they are such a part of society and celebrity that I felt they, you know, should be included in the shows. But I just love impersonating people. It's something I can do, and it's how I explain my world and my feelings.
Tracy Ullman starred in her own network television comedy series on Fox, The
America,
Tracy Ullman Show from 1987 to 1990, later produced programs for HBO, including Tracy Takes On, that was 96 to 99, for which she won numerous awards. Her sketch comedy series, Tracy Ullman's State of the Union, ran from 2008 to 2010 on Showtime, and she now has a new show that is on the BBC and on HBO. It premiered here last Sunday night, and
Tracy Ullman's show. Yet again,
Tracy,
I put my
Ullman's
name in the
with
title.
An apostrophe. Yeah. This case, and you have some sharp comedy in there. I was worried about a spoiler, but since it's already been on the air, there's a sketch of an interview with a candidate who for a job who's left just one important fact off of her resume, and when her potential employers Googled her name, they discovered that she had been convicted of crimes against humanity. But that's okay. Can I reveal why it doesn't seem to bother the potential employers?
Yeah, sure. It's been out already.
It's a bank joke.
It's a bank joke, so you can always make fun of banks. That was a wonderful sketch that it just read brilliantly from, you know, it was just a good conceit and it was funny and dramatic and weird. It was sent by a guy from Ireland that wrote a show called Father Ted, and he lives in Ireland, and he just sent this one sketch in and said, if it's anything you can use, fine, you know, if it's not, just not. And it was just a perfect piece, and it's rather Python-esque, really. It's like something Python would have done years ago. But I found a character I wanted to do for that, you know, and my daughter's in that sketch, funnily enough. The woman that interviews me, my daughter Mabel, who never acts, doesn't want to be in show business, read that script and said, that's really sharp and weird and wonderful. Can I be in it? And we made her audition twice. So that was just a good, weird, wonderful piece. I wish I could find like 10 pieces like that for a series.
And in that case, you're not playing somebody who's well known.
There's another
character, Karen, in a her little bit runs through the show, and she has been reunited with her mother after 28 years. It was her boyfriend who got her into the trouble that has plagued her for 28 years. Was that also just a script that somebody sent in?
No, that was something I'd seen on the news about a woman being released from a Far Eastern country after 23 years and coming home. And, you know, just some people get stuck in these jails for a long, 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 long time. And it seemed to be an analogy of me coming back to the BBC, funnily enough, Leonard, as well. You know, that I go into my bedroom like after 28 years and there was pictures of me and Adam Ant on the wall. So it was a little nod to my return, I think. But I love that piece. I like the woman plays my mother. It's just fabulous. It reminded me like doing a Ken Loach film or something very naturalistic, you know, when we're sitting there and she says, how's Dad? Oh, he died. 1938, you know. Maggie died too. What, Maggie Thatcher? No, her up the road. You know, just the little conversations of how things have changed. So, but she, I would just use her for one show. She was like a little spine of a story for one show because the conceit of the show is that it's like dawn to dusk. So you see her coming into the country in the morning and you see her going to bed at night. So she completes the show. And there was another piece I wanted to write when I was looking at news stories in England a couple of years ago, how refugees hang on under people's cars and camper vans to get into England. And they come over on the cross-channel ferries. And I saw an amazing piece of a Sudanese, young Sudanese guy dropping down from underneath somebody's RV in their driveway. And of course, people just film everything now. And this woman had got her phone out immediately. And she was going, come here, Frank, there's somebody, look at him, he's a young black fella lying in the driveway. And he's going, oh, what should we do? She went, I don't know, should we call the police? He said, no, let's make him a sandwich. And they did. And it was the kindness and the connection and how they went on. And it just that they were filming it. Do we call the police or make him a sandwich? And they made him a sandwich. And I think, you know, they helped him and they talked to him. And I loved that story. I thought that's a great story for the whole show. Although a spine story.
You have to wonder whether she would have voted for or against Brexit.
I know. There you go. There's the dichotomy.
Because there's the personal level and then there's the theoretical level.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Some of the same fears that have gripped British voters, like terrorism, immigration, economic inequality and the like, have also been at work here in the United States. What role do you think that comedy plays in teasing out a more rational response to those kinds of fears?
Well, pieces like that we've just spoken about. And actually, it was tough this year. I'd written everything about Angela Merkel, and then we started filming 2 days in. The Brexit vote happened, and we had to change a lot of the scripts. And there's been a psychological shift in England since this vote. It's strange. It's uneasy, and we don't know what's coming next. And my daughter worked for an MP and was in Parliament for 5 years, and you know she's travels the country the whole time. And I don't think it was any big surprise to her. But I have no political compass right now. It's all shifting. The political world I knew, and you have to try and understand why. And I don't think it was a completely racist vote. I mean, not everyone. Not every vote for Brexit was a racist vote, but every racist voted for Brexit. You know, it's really hard, dude. And it's an economic outcry too.
But Britain has come a long way since I was a student there. When I was looking for rooms at one point, many of the notices would say, colored need not apply, or Europeans only.
Yeah, no blacks, no Irish.
London became perhaps, other than Queens, New York, the most diverse place in the world.
Yeah.
And now we have Brexit. So,
well, London certainly didn't vote for it, but you have these pockets of, you know, it's just so divided up. I know, my husband's golf course up in Scotland was, no dogs or women. That's Muirfield. It's what he used to have. No dogs or women in the clubhouse.
On the other hand, England has had a couple of British women as British prime ministers, which the United States still hasn't had a leader who's a woman as its leader.
I should impersonate her. I know. I remember Margaret Thatcher.
Of course, you know, I remember I had to impersonate her a lot back in the day on Radio 4.
It was till 2 years after she got elected that I remember being a young woman then, and it hit me. I thought, she's a woman. It hadn't occurred to me. So I'm very European. My whole adult life has been the European community. I remember when we went into Europe really big time and our money changed and everything, and all the pensioners were saying, I don't know what a half P is. And I loved it. I mean, it's given us culture and style and food. You're all going to be laughing at us again. You're going to be laughing at us again. We're going to go back to spotted dick and steak and kidney pudding, Leonard. It made us cosmopolitan. And I love being a European. I mean it's been great for us. So I was kind of distressed by it. It's going to be terrible for us culinarily. Is that a word?
Yes, because so many French chefs came in at a certain point.
They are gone now. We don't want. You can have your pasties. You can have your petit dick. Au revoir.
Now, this show has something that couldn't have occurred on the Fox show, and that is nudity. It's kind of fake nudity.
Yeah.
One of your characters is a newly elected MP who goes topless to work, and nudity, in fact, being bare-breasted is part of her political approach. Is that likely to actually be happening?
Yeah,
in England?
There's Danish. There is a party. There is a group of women who do protest topless, and I think run for office in, topless. So we just wanted to. I wanted to play a political character, and then we thought, how can we do a twist on it? What's happening? And then I said, well, let's have her be just a very regular lady called Sally who actually walks around with her breasts out. and so she gets elected and she has to do it. And these are my mandate, she tells people. And I didn't use my own breasts, Leonard. I did go for prosthetic breasts. That my
I
wonderful.
I can see you had a necklace in them.
You arty types. Floris Schuller, my Dutch.
Things.
Yeah, you spot those things. My Dutch makeup artist put the. They're pretty great breasts, though. And it was very hard to work with the crew that day. You know, walking around, they did look like my breasts, you know. Mm. They could either look at me above the neck, the crew, or they kept looking below the neck. It was tough for them.
You have one of the characters you do is a white male app maker who sits in a coffee shop stoking his own fears of being an endangered species. Mm. Now, that's something that we've seen a lot in this country.
Mm.
That's something that is also being talked about in England?
Yeah. And I think he's a perennial character, actually. A lot of English comedy going back for decades has been based on that kind of disgruntled guy. I don't know if you remember in the 60s, there was a actor called Tony Hancock, mm-hmm. and he played a pompous man who didn't understand why he wasn't more powerful or better, you know, making more money than he was. And I think David Brent is that character in The Office, too. Ricky mm-hmm. Gervais's brilliant television show, and there is a disgruntled, disenfranchised, middle-aged white man who's working out of a Starbucks, and I think the jobs have gone now, and my daughter was working for a man with this kind of attitude. They're terrified of working for women. They just don't know how to respond and adapt, and they are. They're developing apps, and we've got this digital platform going in Finland, and, you know, I'm talking to this guy in Miami about the, it's very. I see them in the coffee shops all the time. Go around the lead. Could you go around the lead? I'm on 15%. They're always plugging in stuff. And but I, you know, he's endearing to me. He's another poignant person to me. But I think, yeah, he's very recognizable to an American audience. You see them all the time.
A listener called in to compliment you on a sketch from 20 years ago about being pulled over for a DUI. Do you remember all your old sketches?
Some of them. Yeah, that was a good one. We got to dance in that. Yeah. Joe Malone, Joe Sheck did a fabulous dance number for that. That was funny.
Do you take personal credit for the success of The Simpsons?
No. No, of course not.
But
I'm glad to be
you introduced The Simpsons to the American audience. I remember Matt Groening was on our show just after your show had ended, and I asked him, what are you going to be doing now? And he said, well, you know that sketch, that little animated thing I did on the Tracy Ullman show? We're going to do it as a regular show on Fox. And I said, well, good luck with it. It's now the longest running show in the history of television.
Yes, but it did spin off from my show, and a lot of the writers from the Tracy Ullman show went on to that show. And I'm very proud to be associated with it. I just remember the first week they came to the studio and I was rehearsing all the sketches, and they said, oh, would somebody like to read the voices for this animated thing we're doing? And they said, oh, well, I said, well, I'm a bit busy because I'm, they went, okay. And Julie said, I'll do it. I don't mind. What do you want to read? What's her name, Marge? And she said, I remember that moment. And then Dan, you know. Well, okay, well, I don't mind. Dan Castellaneta, the dearest, fantastic man.
You could have done all the parts.
I know, looking at it now, Leonard. Looking at it now. And Dan was Homer, and they went off to the booth, and I remember watching them doing it. I'm thinking, I wonder if this will come to anything. Ugh, hello.
I've only seen the first of this new series. Are we going to have some recurring characters?
Yes, yes. I like Judy's back, and Maggie Smith is in lots of them. And
Maggie Smith, in this case,
Camilla
is trying out for...
I have this lovely theory that... Well, obviously the theory that Camilla Parker Bowles gets George the grandchildren 1 week, and then... you know, Kate's mum, Carol Middleton, gets them the following week, and they are totally different types of grandmothers, and I sort of do them in the show.
You do both parts?
Yes.
Is she... she used to be the most unpopular woman in the UK. Has she gotten past that?
Yeah, oh, very much so, I think. And I think she's... They're very happy, and the princes seem happy with her, and they're all... Where I used to live in London, I remember running one night. I was going running a bit late, and I remember seeing her and Charles coming out of the gate of Clarence House, and I was sort of held back by a corner, you know. I looked in the back of the car, and there they were, all glowing, and her blonde hair, and this beautiful head-made suit, and they were obviously off to some wonderful event. And I thought, look at you, you know, you did it. You got each other, and they just looked this glowing moment, and then they drove off, and I ran past.
Now, we talked about how you have found it easier to do impressions of other people than many of us. But what about accents? Have you noticed a real change? I have, where British actors now play Americans and nobody knows until they're interviewed on a show like this.
Yes, it's... I know, I think we were just talking about you know, is it Ruth Wilson? And I mean, amazing. I don't know, we've gotten really good at it, and it's because of
is
YouTube
it at the Royal Academy?
And being able to research better, and I think we've loosened up as actors, the Brits. No, we've gotten really good at it. And also, we now realise there's period accents. There's nothing worse than an English actor years ago. They listen to like Doity, Doit, and Doit, and they come over and they talk in this way because they watched an old movie. They think that's how they talk in New York, you know. And you say, no, that's like something you watched an old movie. You know, it's this very current accents, and London too. You've got to keep up with what the accents are in London. It's totally different now.
Well, do you think that it's, to some degree, it's because British actors have always had to do so many British accents. Their accents change in England 12 miles from the nearest town. You have a whole different accent. And actors have been very careful. They have to be, because they're going to be caught. Oh, you're doing a Brighton accent when you're...
Yeah.
When you're
but
in
you've got
Leeds.
The heart and soul of the classics, though. It's still very hard for anybody to do Death of a Salesman in England. It's understanding the American psyche and sociology. You can't quite do that. So I don't want to see a production of The Front Page or Brits, quite honestly, you know.
But we're going to
I don't want to see Fiddler on the Roof without Jews. I mean, please.
Well, a fair number of Gentiles have played it.
I know. Remember that one production they had recently, though? It was just no. It was all Gentiles. That's wrong.
So have you seen The Front Page, the new production?
No.
Oh. I'm going to see it. And we're going to have some of the stars on our show soon.
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. I'd love, yeah. No, we are getting good at it. Everyone's getting good at accents because of you can study them so easily. Maybe years ago, you know, if I wanted to do an accent on the Tracy Ullman show, there was no YouTube. And I used to ring people in, you know, like Brooklyn, you know, to hear their kind of voice. You know, I got to talk to my supervisor. And I would just or ring a librarian or a car dealership or something just so it was much harder then. But no, we are getting good at it.
Well, I look forward to seeing all the different accents in future shows. Tracy Ullman's show airs on Sunday nights at 10 o'clock here in New York on HBO. And as always, it's a great pleasure
it's
having you on our show.
It's lovely to talk to you. It's good to see you again. Thank you. In your fancy, swanky new offices, studios here.